Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Bruno Barron, Nick Kacharubas, Michael Lotus, and Roberto Montano. Our program tonight coming to you from our Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8029. That's 1-800-723-8029. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And, of course, you can join us on the World Wide Web, audio and video, every Sunday night and really 24 hours a day at beyondthebeltway.com. We got another full docket for the next couple of hours. Great guests this evening, as we generally do. And I want to begin with you, Michael Lotus. You're a card-carrying Trump Republican. It looks like, according to Mitch McConnell, next week there may be something for the Trumpsters to celebrate, and that is that Neil Gorsuch will be going to the Supreme Court.
That would be a tremendous thing, and it would also be a very important promise kept by President Trump. And one of the things that got many, many people who are on the fence about him to support him was his promise to appoint justices off his list who would be in that tradition. So it's great to see that.
Bruno Barron, thank you very much for being with us. You're a libertarian. You've been critical of the Trump administration.
Yep.
But again, I think you like Neil Gorsuch.
Absolutely.
Do you believe that Mitch McConnell is going to have to move the nuclear option to get him done?
I would hope so. And I'm a big fan of the nuclear option. I think I don't care whether it's Democrats and a Democratic president. I think the filibuster is something that has to go. I think it has to go for a lot of reasons other than just Supreme Court justices. And it's time to take, you know, everybody says, well, what about when the Democrats get power back? It's like, you know what? The fact of the matter is, it's not in the Constitution. Get rid of the filibuster, and you're not going to be able to reform all the things that need to be reformed, like spending, like health care, without getting rid of it anyway. So just blow it up.
Nick Kacharubas, your reaction from DePaul University?
I think that it would be interesting if that happened, but I think it's going to be difficult to do to get him through and to make that maneuver. But it would be historical none the way, a big win for the Trump administration. They need a win. And so for that reason, I think Bruno may be right that it will pass.
Roberto Montano joins us. First time here. Nice to have you with us. Army veteran, also a Democrat. Your reaction to the Gorsuch nomination, and is this a fight that the Democrats should continue to just make difficult for the president?
Thank you for having me. First of all, it's as a Democrat, I think we should pick our battles. It's not something that we want to leave it all on the mm-hmm. field on this one.
Right.
This is a replacement for the Scalia seat, and in that vein, we're looking at a jurist that, in that light, is pretty fair. And if you burn up your ammo on this one, what are you going to do for the next one?
Follow up on that. Is it worth continuing to burn up your ammo, as you have said, on the Russian investigation? Is that an issue that is an issue that's going to expand the Democratic base and have them be more supportive of Democrats come 2018?
Well, on that one, I'll take off my Democratic hat and just speak as a veteran. That's the national security issue. And on the national security issue, we need bipartisan agreement. So I really would like to see Nunes and Chairman Nunes lead his committee. And
lead or leave?
Lead. Lead. Now, I believe that the president, in his wisdom, has encouraged him to consider recusing himself. My Republican colleagues can correct me if I'm wrong. But that's way too important for us to be playing games on the public policy
Michael
politics.
Lewis, what's your impression of the conduct thus far of Chairman Nunes?
It was a very illuminating piece by Kim Strassel in the Wall Street Journal that helped explain this. He apparently, in his capacity as chairman, has a network of people who are in the intelligence community who give him information, some of it informally. And moreover, if he has information that is secure of a high enough level, you have to be in an executive department site to even look at it. So some of the things he's been criticized for aren't fully grasping the gravity of it. If what she says he has is true, it's very serious, some very serious potentially criminal violations by people in the Obama administration, during the campaign season. And I agree that this is a national security question. We need to get to the bottom of that. If, in fact, there's anything about Trump and Russia that's real, let's get it dumped on the table and put it behind us one way or the other.
Nick, the Russian-Trump connection was started by the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Has it reached a point, however, that it is damaging to Republicans as well? Because there's so much mud in the water now, people may be getting confused by who said what to whom and who leaked this and tying in the not only the fact that someone released information, which they should not have done, but now you have the questioned conduct of the chairman of the House committee.
Well, there's obviously lots of dynamics here, but I think the key piece is that the longer the Democrats keep this going, which it's a drumbeat
drip, drip, drip.
They're allowed to take focus off of any positive things that the President Trump administration would have been able to do or has done, little as those may be. And it continues to gnaw away at the trust in government that people lack, as we saw on both sides in the election. And I think that it does play the Democrats' favor because people who may have voted for Trump, who had supported Trump because they questioned Hillary's connections or who she might have been talking to as Secretary of State, I think the shoe is now starting to be placed on the other foot.
You don't agree with that, Bruno?
Somewhat. To me, what's fascinating, and I don't think anybody at the table knows the facts. I don't think the American people know the facts. It's almost like there's two realities. One reality is there's this massive Watergate administration or Watergate investigation into Trump and Russia and all kinds of illegal activities that might have happened. And then on the much smaller story, but just as big a story, is the fact that entire portions of the former Obama administration apparatus may have been unmasking, and that's a term of art in the national security field, unmasking Trump administration or Trump associates using the national security apparatus for something that had nothing to do with that national security. And the fact is, it's almost as if neither side acts as if the other investigation is actually taking place. Trump could be impeached for something he did. We don't know. And quite frankly, Obama can't be impeached anymore, but members of the Obama administration could conceivably go to jail for using the national security apparatus in a Nixonian fashion against Trump.
It's going to take years to figure this out.
Yeah, the issue, I think, is the chairman an umpire calling balls and strikes, or did he take information and go to the party being investigated? Because the issue here, in my opinion, is was there collusion? And if that's what you're looking to try to figure out, why go talk to the president?
You're talking about collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. You're not talking about collusion between the investigation, Chairman Nunes, and his relations at the White House.
Correct.
Or his connection at the
White
House. Correct.
Okay. So the issue, I think, is was there something going on during the campaign? And if that's the case, if that's what we're investigating, why wasn't it within the committee being addressed? Why did it go outside of the House, so to speak?
Michael, I want to get your response, everybody's response to that, 1-800-723-8029, from coast to coast and border to border. Nice to have you with us this evening. Where do you come down? And by the way, there's one issue that could take everybody's eyes off the Russian Trump investigation, and that is North Korea. We'll talk about it when we come back.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
You can't swim over to Taiwan.
Bruce Dumont back. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. And before the break, I made the comment that, you know, the president and the Trump administration, they are under the gun. They're in a bunker mentality already with less than 100 days in office because of this nonstop discussion of the Russian connection. And I said before the break, there's one way that could end. And I mentioned North Korea. And again, North Korea is rearing its ugly head again. And there are those that are suggesting that, first of all, we as a nation, we're making a mistake if we view their leader as just another maniac nut job, that maybe there is some method to his madness. Do you agree with that, Nick?
I do think there's some method to his madness. I also think that because there's questions about, you know, Trump's beliefs and his ability, you know, he's made so many statements about making America safer. Somebody like the leader of North Korea can do something like this to show, well, you know, you can't control us, and that would just create all havoc.
Well, Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, has already said that, you know, the current situation with North Korea is not an acceptable position. We've been impatient too long. Are you, or how worried are you, Bruno, that there really could be some military action involving North Korea?
Worried enough. No one really knows. I mean, for example, I'm one of those people who thinks that the West has been far too accommodating of the existence of North Korea for far too long. I take that as kind of like a George W. Bush conservative, that there's certain things you just don't let happen. I mean, I'm still pro-Iraq war, even if it was very poorly handled. So I don't even understand why the West allows something like North Korea to exist for any longer than it can if it has the power to do something about it.
Republican and Democratic administrations.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so all of them have been far too accommodating. So it would be good if we would stop accommodating their saber rattling, and, you know, we'll throw a nuke around so that somebody gives us more food aid or more oil aid. They can't even power their own country. They can't feed their own people. They're an atrocity sitting there in plain sight, and we're letting them exist.
Roberto, what is your position? Again, you're a veteran.
Yeah.
You're a Democrat.
Yep. Yep.
And you're interested in national security.
Absolutely.
How big a threat to the national security do you think North Korea represents?
It's enormous. But we have countermeasures and we have leadership. One thing I have to give credit to President Donald Trump is he hired McMaster. McMaster was an Army guy. Mm-hmm. He wrote the book on dereliction of duty, is what it's mm-hmm. called. And he has studied that entire arena, the shift to the Pacific. And he's got a multi-pronged approach. The first thing he wants to do is push economic and then military. Now, I'm a little concerned if our Secretary of State doesn't have the resources to do the diplomatic stuff around it, because there's Malaysia, there's China, there's the Philippines. When President Trump meets with President Xi, that's very, very important. What we're trying to do now is we're trying to say, we have sanctions in place, we're tough, but are they cheating those sanctions? Are they getting around that? We're counting on that fragile relationship, in my opinion, with China, because it's been a little bit harsh, mm-hmm. To control what happens there. The problem is, and maybe this is just a Democrat in me, if we push them too hard, then that's going to destabilize even further the North Korean peninsula, and refugees will come across. China does not want that.
No. Michael, your thoughts on the delicacy of this issue and this certainly does represent an opportunity for President Trump to change the subject on the front pages of the newspapers every day.
You know, there's ways that you don't want to change the subject with a full-scale war breaking out on someone else's terms. That's a lose-lose, right?
Right.
But, you know, it's just interesting because North Korea is one of these regimes. People say it can't go on, and yet it keeps going on. And the leadership is, in its own way, rational. They're acquiring these weapons because they want to have deterrence against everyone to preserve their survival. And the Chinese kind of created this monster, and they need to take the lead in unwinding this problem if there is any way to do it. And that's certainly going to – got to figure that's agenda item one when Trump meets with the Chinese president.
Nick? You know, we talk about, you know, the shift of being able to change sort of the story. I think it could be detrimental to Trump in the sense that if North Korea has some showing, whatever that be, at a minimal level, Trump has been very, very critical of the Obama administration and how they've handled in the past. If Trump takes an action that maybe is a little bit or too harsh, that I think that creates a criticism or creates more criticism in an administration at this point that hasn't been able to deal with the issues it has. I think it could be escalating
even more. Does it put him into a box? Because obviously he's been very outspoken about dealings
Absolutely.
With China, and yet it seems to me that you need China somehow involved in tapping down the stress here.
That's my point exactly. Is if because he's made so many comments prior to his presidency in the campaign about responding to these issues, and then when faced with the decision, what is he going to do, and how is that going to affect the other things? I think the media pressure will be higher, and you're going to see more skirting around issues.
You may have answered the question, Roberto, but the point is this one of these issues that literally would force Democrats to lower their sights, lower their language, quit looking through the rearview mirror on the Russian-Trump connection and whether or not there was influence in the campaign, and that it would force them to look at a bigger, broader issue, and that is, do we have a situation where there's someone out there in the world who literally or may very soon have the ability to launch an attack that would take out the West Coast of the United States?
Well,
which again, that is the ultimate rally around the flag issue. Is that something that the Democrats would be prepared to support the president on that subject?
You know, every Democrat that I know across the country, I was stationed in Hawaii. I've been to Germany, both all over the world. Every service member, we all love our country, and we come back and we put down our swords when it comes time to rally. The president's our president too, and we may not have liked how it ended up, but we're country first all day long. Unfortunately, right now, to put a timeline on it, KT McFarland, that's President Trump's deputy national security advisor, has said, and I quote, "There is a real possibility that North Korea is capable of hitting us by 2020 with a nuclear-armed missile." That's 2020. They can hit our allies now. Now, we love our Japanese allies. They give us $2 billion a year, and we help them with their security. But I was there during the earthquake. I can tell you that their defense forces are incredible. They have an Aegis system. Our Navy is shifting assets over there. The Army is moving resources. We have armored cavalry all over South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
The North Korean leader is not crazy. He's not stupid. What he does is what he's doing is probably immoral. You know, he's starving his own people
right.
to maintain power. But these nuclear weapons are his only way to keep that power.
And my point here is, and I didn't articulate it good earlier, but is what happens if he, you know, we're talking like what if he attacks on another nation, but what if he just does a test, a test bomb, in the sense, or does some sort of test that we can. How does
provocative action,
which I don't to taunt the Trump administration? How does Trump respond to that? Mm-hmm. And I think that puts Trump in a very difficult position.
Bruno,
one of the things that's interesting here, and way before Trump was ever around, I might have even mentioned this on this show at some time, Bruce. You've got China. I mean, North Korea started off, and Mike was right. This is a Chinese buffer state, and they are the ones that wound this thing up, and they're the ones that have to take the lead in getting rid of it. And it was very well put. Trump is perfectly situated to wield the perfect weapon in dealing with the Chinese to get them to help, and that is trade. And trade was one of the issues. I was not a Trump fan. I'm pro trade, but there is nothing wrong with going to China and saying, your economy relies on trade. You have to ship X billions of ships over here, shiploads of goods over here all the time. you need to start helping us with this issue, and you need to start unwinding this. And that would seem to me to be, you know, and I'm not saying immediately start a trade war. I'm not saying get on tweet, you know, China stops North Korea, or I'm not going there bad or sad. I'm talking about diplomatically working the trade angle.
We had someone here last week on the show when we were discussing the subject, and one of the questions was, China's got to find some way to get you know, the Kim Jong Un out. Literally move him to China, put somebody else in there, and begin the process of reunification.
Well,
but the reunification of Korea, I would think that isn't something necessarily that the Japanese would like, or the Chinese would like, or anybody would like.
The Koreans would like it. The Chinese will not tolerate it, and the Japanese won't like it.
No.
So what?
And because they could become significant. Trading.
The Koreans have a long, were a colony of Japan, and they still don't like Japan. And you don't have to go very long talking to Koreans before they'll tell you how they feel about Japan. And the Japanese do not want a united Korea as 20 years from now a booming economy full of people hostile to them. What a Chinese, heavy Chinese involvement in some kind of resolution of this would probably end up with a still divided Korea, but hopefully a less a much more civilized and tolerable regime in the North.
By the way, a program note, tomorrow night on NBC, I think it may be even for a couple of nights, Lester Holt is originating his broadcast from Seoul, Korea, tomorrow night. You may want to take a look at that. But today, if you did not see Bob Woodruff on ABC, he was on this week's ABC, he was inside North Korea. He was filing his report from North Korea. And I saw pictures of North Korea that I frankly didn't believe. It's a bustling, it isn't the backward country that it has been perceived to be. And if you go to ABC this week, look up Bob Woodward's report. It will be eye-opening for you. Back shortly. Mother's Day is coming up on Sunday, May 14th. Do you have something special for your mom this year? How about an experience that she'll never forget, and one you and your entire family can enjoy watching for years to come? It's an opportunity for your mom to be interviewed by Larry King down at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in downtown Chicago. It's an opportunity for her to share her childhood, her life's memorable moments, the moments that frequently are shared over holiday dinners. The Larry King Fantasy Interview Experience is a recorded memory for a lifetime. Her interview with the legendary Larry King, recorded, then edited together, for all to see and share with the family around the world. The questions are simple, nothing to study for, but an opportunity for your mom to share her life with Larry King. Go to museum.tv for further details. Look for Larry King's picture. That's museum.tv. A great gift for only $24.95. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and Bruno, you were going to make a point. We're talking about world affairs. We're talking about North Korea, and it would be good to hear from listeners and on the program this evening as to whether or not you're concerned about North Korea. You're beginning to hear horror stories about North Korea and their capability, whether they can even hit the western part of the United States. We're beginning to hear those stories with some degree of regularity. You have the Secretary of State basically going to the DMZ and basically saying that, you know, the way we've been, the patience that we've shown in North Korea is that time is up. So I want to know whether or not this early discussion of even the terms preemptive strike, which are coming into conversations in Washington and on even talk radio, started on this program several weeks ago, whether those things that are they concerning to you, or is it more discussion and more preparation for something that's never going to happen?
It should be concerning. I follow this enough to know that, you know, every day you wake up and you think things are going to be just like they were before, and you never know when something in North Korea may break very badly. I wanted to do a quick comment that that we have a little bit of a disagreement here. I mean, I think the proper moral goal is that if a nation wants to reunite, they should be able to reunite. But Mike makes a very good case that China really doesn't want to have a free reunited North Korea on its border. That's all fine. There's all kinds of scenarios here. But what you were saying, Bruce, with this ABC program that talked about how great things were in the Capitol, I'm a little bit...
By the way, no, I want to stress, it didn't say that things were great in the Capitol. That was my impression. Mm-hmm. With all the impression that I've had of life in North Korea, I mean, to see busy streets and skyscrapers and people walking in and you know, playing tennis and stuff like that. I mean, that's not the impression that most people have of North Korea.
Well,
so that picture was worth a thousand words, but the report was also saying that, you know, the leader that they spoke with, it wasn't the top guy, but you know, they're fearful of Donald Trump because the North Koreans, they think he's a little wacky.
Well, and he may well be. Like I said, I've never been a super Trump fan, but he is the president now. What I think is interesting about that is that you still see the. I mean, maybe it's different. Maybe things have changed. So I don't want to like go back to an old internet picture, but there's the satellite picture of North Korea at night with everything around it, and you look at Seoul and you see Japan and you see all the lights and you see all the cities.
Lights are out.
And there aren't any, you know, and then there's also report. I mean, there's people that have smuggled out cameras. I mean, I saw the whole frontline thing about how they have South Koreans that are trying to smuggle cameras in, people taking pictures of all kinds of places around North Korea. You've got stunted growth. You've got very little nutrition for the vast majority of people. So it's very clear that you can make a capital look nice when an ABC crew comes in, especially when you can point that ABC crew exactly at what you want them to see and kind of punish them if they show pictures of anything else. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that they aren't still very dangerous. They apparently are sophisticated enough to do what they need to do when they need to do it.
Michael?
One thing that Trump is tip. It's funny. He'll say something and people don't believe him, and he keeps saying it. During the campaign, he kept talking about China has to solve the North Korean problem. It's an oversimplification, but they do need to be engaged. And the other thing is, you know, the old saying, the enemy gets a vote. We're sitting here talking about all these different scenarios. North Korea has the capacity to surprise us by doing something we don't expect. And there's also the other thing is, as much as we say, use a phrase like preemptive strike, right? It's talking about going to war. There's a difference between even a very unpleasant and dangerous peace like this and open warfare. Once you're in open fighting, anything can happen. So we need to be very careful about that. But I think the key thing is to get all the regional powers involved, lean on the North Koreans, and ultimately the goal is to change this regime in the least destructive way possible.
But in this particular case, let's play what if, okay? They play these games in the Pentagon. What if? What if North Korea launched an attack against either South Korea or Japan, probably South Korea?
We have an alliance with both of those countries. We're at war.
We have to respond. NATO's got to respond as well, right?
There wouldn't even be an order.
NATO's not involved. Just the United States?
Just the United States.
We already have standing orders and all that. Right now, I can tell you, we have a thing called THAAD, Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. Those would trigger immediately. They're already deployed.
Tell us what would happen.
So last year, North Korea launched 20 missiles. And they were the test missiles. There's another. What's different right now is that they're launching multiple missiles at a time because they're trying to determine if they could overcome our deterrent. Our deterrent, as of 2 years ago, we had a very high confidence that we would knock them all down. What we don't know is what would happen to the Philippines, Vietnam, Taiwan, Japan. Japan, we think, can take care of itself, but all of our allies. The real horror is the global meltdown. I mean, obviously, anybody that dies is horrible, but there are $5 trillion worth of shipborne trade that go through there. And if one missile goes the wrong way, all that's going to crash. And that's going to have ripple effects all over the world. The actual body count?
I want to follow. You mean an
more
attack
people will
on...
die?
No, but do you mean an attack on a ship?
What I'm saying is that if we destabilize the region,
yes,
then there'll be more people dying as a secondary effect mm-hmm. than the missile that we're going to intercept.
There's another way to think about this. If a warfare were to break out over there and it wasn't quick and it became a protracted conflict, massive amounts of the world economy goes through that area.
Oh, yeah.
Just one detail. Shipping insurance. You can't send a container ship somewhere unless you can buy maritime insurance, and they won't insure ships going into war zones, okay? This is the type of thing that will just explode throughout the economy, have devastating effects on places nowhere near where the fighting's actually occurring.
What do we do, Nick?
Well, my question has been, you know, you talk about a preemptive action and Trump saying that China should handle it, and we that's the best case scenario we've laid on the table. My question is can Trump encourage in the interest of the U.S. security on this 2020 deadline possibly, is can Trump encourage China to step up given some of the other things he says? Will they do it? Does he have the ability to make those connections and those.
Why
those
would the Chinese want to make life easier for us?
That's
on
my
the
question.
International stage.
It's a good question. They probably don't want to make life easier for us, but they don't want to make life more difficult for themselves either. They have all kinds of economic problems. They need the world to be stable as well. I mean, what we're talking about here, and I think everybody at the table agrees on this, that let's put it this way. Let's say there is a massive global recession based on some kind of bad thing happening in the Korean Peninsula. The United States of America is going to be the last to be inundated, and it's going to economically, and it's going to be the first to recover because we occupy the highest economic ground on all this stuff. The rest of the no one in the rest of the world. China has unbelievable losses, much worse than us. If anything goes wrong,
that's right.
Let's go. I want to go to Terry in St. Joe, Indiana, listening to us on WoWo. Go ahead. Nice to have you with us, Terry. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead. Line one.
Yeah. I just wanted to say I taught English in South Korea for 10 years, and I just want to say at the end of the day, this is South Korea's call. I mean, if war breaks out, they're going to lose 1 million people in about 30 minutes. So, you know, wherever we needed them, they were there. So I think we have to consider, you know, it's their call. You know, they're basically dealing with a mad dog in their backyard. And it's truly an evil place. I don't know what the pictures show, but that guy's a nut job. And I really think we have to support whatever decision South Korea makes.
But again, in South Korea, how many people in South Korea want reunification with North Korea? How widespread is that desire?
The young people are really split on that. That's one of the things we used to debate in class because it's been so long. They see them as Koreans. But, you know, they even speak Korean differently. So there's almost, I would say, a 50-50 split, you know. They're not really sure. I think they see it as there's all kind of potentials. But also, just like when East Germany joined Germany, there were all these poor people that were the responsibility of West Germany overnight. And South Korea would have the same thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of natural resources would pour in, mm-hmm. but you have massive poverty that South Korea would be responsible for overnight. Yeah. But this can't continue forever, you know. Yeah. At some point, something's got to be done.
Michael? To respond to a couple of things. One, Korea is a military ally of the United States, and if they were attacked, we'd defend them. We have military there, and there's no question that we are allies and that they have been on our side. Now, the other question is, what if, he points out, North Korea is a very poor country. If there was a war and there was a lot of damage resulting from a war, it would be even worse. I can imagine a scenario where the USA, China, Japan, other regional countries would have to come up with a huge bag of money to invest in North Korea, like the Germans did in East Germany, and try to get that country developed enough so it can participate in the world economy. Just one more huge cost that we're all going to end up paying for this horrible dictatorship.
Let alone what the United States would be pouring into that.
Trump would have to be the deal maker. He'd have to tell the Chinese and the Japanese, we all have to be in on this because it can't be. No one can do it by themselves. It's certainly not South Korea by itself.
The Chinese are going to storm across that line, and they're going to take as much territory as they can. And then we've already retreated past their immediate artillery positions. The American infantry and air cav is going to respond via air assault. That's our plan. And we've war game.
But should we? Part of this is the building of these islands by the Chinese in the South China Sea. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're sort of watching that happen. We've got our ships around intimidating.
Yeah, but
them,
we're going
but
through
they're
there.
Still doing
we're
it.
We're
right?
flying the flag through there. We're ignoring that. They've got no legal ground except their own.
But they're still doing it, right?
Yeah, they are. But
in other words, it's not a big deal.
We don't care what they think on that.
Okay. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we'll have more calls and your conversation as well.
You know what the biggest Air Force in the world is?
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago on opening night, opening day of Major League Baseball, and the Cubs and the Cardinals are playing in St. Louis a little bit later on this evening. And, of course, the White Sox open in a cold Chicago tomorrow, 3 o'clock, against the Detroit Tigers. So baseball is back again. It's always great to be back with baseball. And, again, we should also mention that if you grew up in Chicago and you were of a certain age, you remember Jack Brickhouse. We at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, we want everyone to remember Jack Brickhouse. And for the month of April, celebrating baseball and celebrating Jack Brickhouse, if you come down to the museum, you don't even have to visit. If you want to just pop in, we're going to give you a Remember Jack Brickhouse sticker for your car or for yourself. And you know, everybody remembers Harry Carey because he was the most recent personification of the Chicago Cubs. But before that, for 40 years, there was Jack Brickhouse. So as we celebrate baseball and one of the icons of Chicago broadcasting here at the museum, again, you can remember Jack Brickhouse at 360 North State for the entire month of April. And again, in addition to baseball, obviously, the country will be focused tomorrow night on the final two games, the final game, rather, of the big NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. And Mike from Spokane, Washington, KXLY, who's a frequent caller to this program, I know you must be very happy that Gonzaga is going to go for their first national championship tomorrow night, and hopefully they're going to knock off a North Carolina.
Oh, thank you, Bruce. I'm very happy. People are wearing – miracles do happen. People here in Spokane are wearing sweaters, Gonzaga and Coeur d'Alene sweaters, and Lewiston is kind of –
Well, you know, whenever I think of Gonzaga, actually, I think of you, Mike, because you've been calling this show for many, many years. We have originated. KXLY is one of our oldest affiliates. We've originated from that station on several occasions. And the first time I ever went there, I visited Gonzaga University, and that is also where Bing Crosby, who was an inductee into the Radio Hall of Fame, went. That's one of his great notoriety of the university. But that Bing Crosby notoriety is going to completely blown away tomorrow night when hopefully Gonzaga wins its first national championship. But you're calling on a different subject. This is not a sports talk show. You wanted to talk about North Korea.
Yes, I do, actually. It's a good Jesuit college of 7,000 students. But, yeah, North Korea, you know, it begins and ends with China from day one. Their supplies and money, technical support comes from China. China could end this nuclear program of North Korea's within 10 days, but they don't. They don't want to. Now, at some point, they're going to wish they did because things might get out of control with the military in North Korea. But they could end this. They could put pressure on it, and they've not been doing it. China says they've been trying to rein in North Korea, but they really haven't.
But here's my question to you, and I'm going to ask you first, and then we're going to get everybody around the table. You've got Kim Jong-un, okay? He's the leader. Everyone is saying that he's a crazy man. But the reality is he can't be so dumb that he doesn't know that China could come down on him in a big way if they choose to do it. So it seems to me that whatever he's doing with the understanding that it's okay with China. And the question I asked a few moments ago is why wouldn't China want this to continue? I mean, there's this madman out there who's scaring all of our allies, scaring us and beginning to scare people on the West Coast of the United States when they hear that, you know, a North Korean missile can hit them in Los Angeles. So we're sort of on the edge. We're walking, you know, on eggshells with this guy. But why does China care? I mean, you know, if we're in a competitive situation with China, and I don't believe China wants to wage military war against the United States, but it wants to wage economic war against the United States and interfere in our elections and everything else that we're blaming the Russians on. They want all this influence. They're buying up U.S. property left and right. So they want influence on the United States. So I don't think they want to destroy the United States militarily, but they want us to be bogged down with our mines and maybe with investment and maybe defense dollars. They want this little wart over here called North Korea to continue to fester and bother us. So why would they want to get rid of the wart?
Well, you're right.
Let's get your answer, right. And then we'll get everybody else's.
Okay, you're right, Bruce. You know, he is a mad, but he's also a genius. And, intimidation comes in at some point. If you have missiles, nuclear missiles, which can reach Japan, which they can now in Australia, possibly the United States. So intimidation becomes a factor, the scare factor. Perhaps China doesn't think that we will use preemptive action, but there comes a point where China might wish they would have or still can take control more of North Korea.
But there has got to be – it seems to me that Kim Jong-un has got to know that, you know, he's a very powerful guy. But I'm sure it isn't just the CIA that would like to see him go away. I'm sure there are those in China that would like to see him go away, not in any peaceful way. They'd like to see him gone. And I'm just saying is that,
right,
that he is being intellectually intimidated by the Chinese, when in turn he is intimidating the United States and the rest of the free world, at least in that region of the world. He's scaring the bejesus out of them. So I don't know why anybody would want to change that dynamic. We would, because we don't want the thought of a preemptive strike against us. So that's why we're talking preemptive strike.
In the news reports about the assassination of his half brother, there was talk about, you know, you start reading, like, why did he go after this guy now? He let him go earlier. Essentially, his older half-brother said, I don't want power. Don't do anything to me. Leave me alone. I'll leave. I'm going to be gone forever. Don't worry about me. So somewhere, and there in one of the press reports, there was someone somewhere started talking about him as an option against Kim Jong-un. And who knows? I mean, maybe China was thinking, hey, can we get this guy out of retirement? Maybe the United States made some noise. Maybe somebody dropped maybe the North Korean spy network understood that China was talking to him or something and just decided to end something like that. I mean, it's actually much more Game of Thrones than it is elections and parliament. So who knows what was going on over there?
We've got to move on. We'll be back shortly. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border tonight. Solving the issue of North Korea. Back shortly after news.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
It's experience more history at museum.tv.
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while 1 in 5 children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Back in Chicago, we continue with our discussion of world affairs this evening. In case you just tuned in, we're talking about North Korea, how much of a threat it really is. There's been a lot of language back and forth about the capability of the North Koreans and a lot of saber rattling on the part of their leader. And with a new sheriff in Washington, D.C., it's always interesting to see, you know, how this could be Donald Trump's first major international issue that he has to deal with. In fact, in the letter that was left by President Obama on his desk when he left, in that letter, according to published reports, there was a warning for President Trump or an alert to President Trump that North Korea was going to be probably a major problem for him during his first administration. So we're dealing with that this evening. It's a little off target from some of the Sunday shows, but again, I think you probably have all, you know, had enough of the Russian investigations, at least at the moment. It'll come back. It's not going away. But we do have Eve on the phone. She's listening to us on Sirius XM satellite radio, and she's calling from Detroit, Michigan. Go ahead, Eve. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. I listen to Beyond the Beltway all the time. I'm originally from Chicago.
Thank you.
It's a taste of home.
Good.
Sometimes I think when we talk about North Korea, to me it's almost like one of those things people get wrapped up in Ebola or the newest fad to be afraid of. They're such an uneducated country and so poor and so hungry that I almost try to think that if their president or emperor did decide to try and wage war, if their borders became unprotected, I have to assume there'd be a wave of people running to get out of that country.
Yes, I agree with that. But the point here, which is, and this is what everybody says when they talk about their leader, that they say he's a madman. You know, sometimes, I mean, madmen don't think rationally. So if he feels that, you know, his place in history, you know, he's not going to get the, you know, the 19 virgins or whatever it is that those, you know, in the Middle East are talking about. The reality here is this guy, you know, he may have this complex and wake up on the wrong side of the bed one day and decide, hey, I'm going to let's see if we can take out Los Angeles. Probably not likely, but he might be able to take out, he definitely would be able to take out Seoul and possibly Tokyo.
If anything in a U.S. territory that would be in danger is Guam. I mean, if a missile was headed for California, we'd be able to shoot it down in the ocean long before it got here.
I would think we would. But here's the bigger issue. I mean, they talk about the capability to reach Los Angeles. Do we wait until the time comes that they have the ability maybe to really do that? I mean, that's sort of what we're dealing with Iran. Do we wait for them to really get beefed up and have the capability that we fear? Or, in this particular case, you don't have to hit Los Angeles. If you hit one of our allies, we automatically become involved in retaliating against that.
Well, Iran's so much wealthier, but when you're talking about North Korea, I mean, how many missiles do they really have to launch?
See,
you know, for an all-on war? Like, are we talking one that gets shot down in the ocean, or?
Eve, this is where one of the, you know, what was it, W said this, or I think it was Condoleezza Rice, we don't want to find out, you know, we don't want our first knowledge of Iraq having a bomb to be a mushroom cloud. The fact is that while you're correct that there's, you know, we're not going to, North Korea can't defeat the world, they can't defeat China, they can't even defeat South Korea, but what they can do is, whether they intend to or not, or whether that's their long-term goal, one successful strike could bring down the entire world trading system, just at least from an economic perspective, not a military one. So it is completely rational to discuss how we, quote-unquote, stop them, whether, and I'm not even talking about preemptive strikes, I'm just talking about it makes sense to try and find a way to defuse this bomb before we ever find out how many missiles they really have.
Roberto, you just got a comment as well.
So, Eve, that's my concern. I'm a Democrat. Is, you know, there are 13 million people in Japan, and they're our allies. But in addition, there's also the $5 trillion in shipborne trade every year in that area. And if that's destabilized, then what's going to happen is we're going to see ripple effects across the globe. It'll be in Detroit. It'll be in Chicago. Even though we're not directly there. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, Michigan gets almost all of its parts sent to it from China.
Yeah.
One of the problems we have having this conversation is there's so many things that we don't know. We don't know what communications occur between the Chinese and North Korean leadership. We don't know what exactly Tillerson and Mattis and the president, when they suddenly seem to be turning the heat up on this issue, really know. We don't know whether or not the leadership of North Korea is actually detached from reality or just acting that way to create a situation where we don't want to risk confronting them. We don't know how tactical it
is. Here's another big question. What is the current relationship between Russia and China? They've always been sort of at each other in a competitive way, and so for hundreds of years. So, what is that relationship? And would a close relationship between the United States, or a close working relationship between the United States and our President Donald Trump with Vladimir Putin, is that a marker that can be used in this bigger, broader issue of either putting more pressure on China to put more pressure on North Korea? I mean, I don't know how you separate all of these. Go ahead.
I don't think we really need Russia because, as you brought up, you thought China might be trying to play something behind the curtains. But with how much money we owe China, would they really want to try and destabilize any of our trade or anything like that that would slow down payments made to them?
Yeah,
isn't that one of our strongest points is how much money we actually owe them?
My concern, Eve, is that we don't have a Henry Kissinger here, and Rex Tillerson is not really equipped because he doesn't have a subsecretaries or undersecretaries, deputy secretaries. There isn't any infrastructure right now.
Not yet.
Not yet. We're hoping that happens, right?
Because he's waiting for the Democrats to
approve. The Democrats and I'm a Democrat, not approved a lot of his appointees, but he has...
Which could be hurting our security, national security.
But there are hundreds of vacancies.
Yes.
Right? And we don't have acting ambassadors in all of our... in Malaysia, in the Philippines, in Vietnam. And I'd like to quote SecDef Mattis, or Mad Dog Mattis, and that's a term of endearment. If you don't fund the State Department, I'm going to have to buy more bullets. And so there's a lot of soft power here that I think Eve is referring to that we can deploy.
I nominate Mike and Roberto for immediate approval for the State Department. I think the two of them, based on the stuff that they've been saying here tonight, I think the two of them would make excellent additions, and they should get them right on the bench as quickly as possible.
If Tillerson calls, I think we're on the plane.
If called, I shall serve.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right, Eve, we're going to move on from you, but thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. And also, not only you, but also everybody listening on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, in addition to America's great talk radio stations from all over the country that join us every Sunday night, including WIQO, FM 100.9, our new affiliate in Lynchburg, Virginia, and KGX Real Talk, 920 AM in the great city of Palm Springs, California. They're all with us tonight. So are you. We'll be back shortly with more calls at 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Continue, and let's go to Mike in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on WKBN. He has an interesting idea to resolve this entire situation. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Mr. Dumont. Thanks for having me on. Good to talk to you guys. Now, ultimately, regarding North Korea, a negotiation needs to take place to end this ridiculous situation. And the strategy of isolating North Korea for over 60-plus years now has not worked. And a fresh approach is needed. And, I mean, who made this rule that we can't even talk to the North Koreans? So if I were Trump, what I would do, and I hope Mr. Trump is listening to me and his team, I would ask Dennis Rodman to be the U.S. ambassador to North Korea. Now, Rodman is good friends with Kim Jong-un. He went over there. They watched him play basketball
together.
They had a great time.
Yes, he was.
Now, not only would this be hilarious, but it actually, in my opinion, it would yield much better diplomatic results. Because right now, it can't get much worse than the situation we're in right now.
Let's let everybody respond. We'll talk. Nick Katsaroubas, this is not an idea that you would hear floated on Meet the Press or Face the Nation.
No, but on Beyond the Beltway, this is where the best ideas always come up.
That's right.
And, you know, as we've talked about, this is a non-traditional presidency. It was a non-traditional campaign. That would certainly be a non-traditional appointment.
add to that that Kim Jong Un is a non-traditional adversarial issue. I think.
Mm-hmm.
So,
this is not. I mean, in all deference, Mike, this is not necessarily a totally crackpot idea.
I think the point here is this: the idea is if what you've been doing for 60 years is not getting you anywhere, some fairly radical change may be an improvement. Of course, the problem is it's a very risky scenario. You can't get things wrong. Also, the idea generally of responding to a totalitarian society, not by isolating it, but by trying to push the door open, get the lights on, get them engaged with the rest of the world and create a popular discontent with the regime and force them to open up, is not a bad policy proposal. Whether Dennis Rodman is a particular instrument to do that, he's been there. He's give him that. He chose to go there and met the leader.
Take his phone call.
But he'll take his phone call. But the more general notion that we should have some kind of push to get the North Korean people engaged and contact them and reach out to them, not just try to deal directly with their leadership.
Roberto, how is this a cockamamie idea or not?
I think Cuba's a good model. I think we tried something new in Cuba. Like the caller said, things weren't working, and so we went in a different direction. And so I think that what happened in Cuba is we allowed the market to quietly start to get in there, and people saw their self-interest, and they're like, you know what? We like freedom. And if we come in there, regardless of who we send, I don't know about Mr. Rodman, but Jordan might do it. I'm from Chicago. Michael Jordan could do it. but regardless of who we send, the issue is how do we get those people to participate in the free market? And if they can benefit. Now, there is a small little part of North Korea where they were trying that. And inside of North Korea, they were trying to have South Korean companies.
Like enterprise zones.
Exactly. Now, and by the way, let's remember that the South Korean president just got put in jail, right?
This is the worst time in their history other than the war.
It's fragile. I mean, there were millions of people protesting. So we have to be very delicate, right, showing up, being the big American that we are. And I'd say take it slow, open the markets, and there's already a mechanism for that. And then regardless of who you send, the market will help people.
But when you say regardless of who sent, just to pick up on Mike's point, if you send, and I don't mean to suggest that all diplomats are stuffy, but many of them are, if you send a stuffy, starch shirt diplomat over to see Kim Jong-un, why would he treat that person with the respect that they might need? Whereas he and his father before him seemed to be a celebrity, you know, affected by celebrity, and that, you know, maybe this is an example where basketball diplomacy
could work.
Follows in the wake of ping-pong diplomacy.
And that's sort of where I was at the beginning is I mean, it's sort of an – might be considered an off-the-record or off-the-cuff sort of idea, but the fact that the caller makes is that there could be conversations between Dennis Rodman and Kim Jong-un where there may not be necessarily with
else?
Another with another
else?
Appointment. So
I mean, he'd be excited to take a couple of he's already you know, gone there with – again, according to the published reports. We don't know if all of the published reports about what Dennis Rodman did there are
one
accurate
of the things,
or not.
And this is what I've been trying to say earlier, is a strategy would be needed and followed by the administration to – and I don't know if there's necessarily that in place.
Here's a bigger, broader question, and this gets back to more contemporary and things that are going on right now. If the United States – is going to pursue any policy in North Korea, they want it to be based on solid intelligence. And does this administration, have they already burned their bridge with the intelligence community? And would this president believe intelligence that's presented to him about North Korea and their capabilities? Is that believable information, or is that going to be dismissed by him because of the mistrust between the two?
I'll jump in on that one. Possibly, but so what? The fact is that while there's many, many talented people in our security establishment, and we have all kinds of fantastic technology, I think it's fair to say that you are dealing with a bureaucracy, and that bureaucracy may have been politicized. That's level one. And level two is they missed 9/11. They missed the weakness of the Soviet Union back in I'm one of those people who says, look, I'm all happy we have a CIA. I think you have to do some spying somewhere, and somebody's got to figure out what's going on with all those satellites and spy planes and intercepts. But they haven't acquitted themselves. The American intelligence establishment has not acquitted itself as some super hot agency.
But we don't
know.
By the way,
when Donald Trump suggested that, Donald Trump is jumped on by saying, "Oh my God, you're insulting the intelligence community." When he brought up the fact,
I've jumped on Donald Trump on a lot of stuff. That wasn't one of them.
Is this the same group that said we had weapons of mass destruction, which the left has been saying since 9/11?
It's your first question. It depends what the intelligence is. If make something up. I'm the say president sitting at his desk, and they say we. There's five people in this room who get to hear this. We have been reading everything on Kim Jong-un's phone. Could be, right? Making things up. Then they know something. If they say, well, our interpretation of this and these disparate pieces of information tell us that this is going to happen, that they're going to attack on Tuesday and we need to go to war now, he may not believe that that's a sufficient basis. We don't know. Now, as to whether the people in the system are so adversarial to the president they're not going to tell him things he needs to know, I think I'm kind of cynical.
I think my point would be is is not only how he receives it, it's what is being sent to him. Because what we know now is everything appears to be that it's a bleak picture. It's they're having more missile.
I don't believe it's just Donald Trump's credibility with the interns. Yes, that right. There's a hit there, but it's also his top secretaries, like the Secretary of Defense, right. Secretary of State, and you know those people. And if they believe that those intelligence reports are credible, and they're whispering in his ear as well, I do think that plays a role as well.
Well, what Tillerson recently said about we're not going to be patient, we've been sufficiently patient, or whatever the exact phrase was, we're not going to be patient anymore. I mean, I can't believe that just flew out of his mouth without some intelligence briefing prior to that, nor do I believe that there wasn't some conversation, hopefully with the president, about him even saying that.
In the diplomatic
world. That was viewed as a provocative statement, obviously, by North Korea.
It's a major statement. Coming from him.
It's as big a statement that has been made by the Trump administration since he got elected.
I think that's true.
I have a lot of faith in the intelligence systems. I think that the Secretary of Defense, who is running the Naval Intelligence, Army Intelligence,
and
various other intelligence agencies, he has an intimate understanding of it. And I have a lot of faith in our uniformed service members that have gone into the administration. But the president's not sitting down for his presidential daily bulletin. And I think that's to his detriment, because then there's a vacancy there. And he's needs to consume some sort of information. And if he gets it from, I'll just say, a non-traditional source, maybe
Fox News, maybe
whomever, that might not be the most processed, refined intel. And so that might get him into a different mindset. And that's very delicate. So if he would, in my opinion, humbly consider absorbing that, the enormous amount of intelligence, human intelligence, signal intelligence that gets put into this presidential daily bulletin, that would do wonders.
Do we know what his daily routine is with, say, his national security advisor, who's, I think, a really impressive guy, McMaster? How do they meet daily? Do we know? Does anyone know?
The NSC has Bannon on it now.
Right.
Right. And that, in my opinion, is unhelpful because it politicizes what should be a pure intelligence conversation. And it seems to me that if we could just have a little bit more Mathis, a little less Bannon, we would be in good shape.
But okay.
And that's every day. It's supposed to be every day.
But we don't know that there is that much less. I mean, the national news media has focused on the fact that one guy is in the room. We don't really know to what extent or how often Mattis and the other national security people have the ear of the president. We don't know that. I mean, it just the news media has just said, well, we don't want this political guy in the room. But we don't know. I mean, he may be getting as good information as he thinks he needs. We don't know. We have to trust that the president is acting wisely.
But verify.
Back shortly.
But verify.
Mother's Day is coming up on Sunday, May 14th. Do you have something special for your mom this year? How about an experience that she'll never forget, and one you and your entire family can enjoy watching for years to come? It's an opportunity for your mom to be interviewed by Larry King down at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in downtown Chicago. It's an opportunity for her to share her childhood, her life's memorable moments, the moments that frequently are shared over holiday dinners. The Larry King Fantasy Interview Experience is a recorded memory for a lifetime. Her interview with the legendary Larry King, recorded, then edited together, for all to see and share with the family around the world. The questions are simple, nothing to study for, but an opportunity for your mom to share her life with Larry King. Go to museum.tv for further details. Look for Larry King's picture. That's museum.tv. A great gift for only $24.95. Stumont back in Chicago. My question, there's been a lot of talk about whether or not Congressman Nunes should recuse himself. Does anybody believe that Adam Schiff should recuse himself? the Democrat on the committee? Is he acting in a responsible way?
The word isn't even appropriate. You recuse yourself from a investigation or something if you've got some personal interest. Neither of them should recuse themselves. They should continue to do their job on the committee. And what the committee should really be doing is getting everything possible in the public eye so we can have a factual basis to decide if there's anything to these accusations.
But you've already got the battle now. Not battle. You have a disagreement between the House and the Senate. The Senate is basically saying we're going to do a much better job of this. Yeah. And they may be right.
Well, and I happen to agree that, again, it goes back to the conversation earlier about trust in government. I don't think what Chairman Nunes did does anything to have allow Americans to have a trust in that congressional process. And I think that the Republican leadership in the House need to have a conversation with him about that because it leads to more questions. I don't agree that Congressman Schiff should step away from it because I don't think he was acting outside of what he was. That information should have been shared with the committee.
Do you
first.
Think he's acting in a partisan way more so than anybody else?
I think everybody. This is what has gotten so bad about D.C. right now. Everybody's acting in a partisan way all the time, and everything is partisan. It's like there is, you know, and the Republicans were somewhat guilty of this when it came to Obama's presidency. I mean, you know, let's face it. When Mitch McConnell turns around in 2009 and says, "Our one goal is to make sure that Barack Obama is a one-term president," well. I wish he was a one-term president. I wasn't an Obama fan. But what you're essentially doing when you say that is like our party winning is more important than anything else that happens right. in this country, whether it's a Russian investigation, a North Korean problem, or the economy. And that's just nonsense. It's gotten out of hand.
Do you think, speaking of what's out of hand, I mean, the operations of the first 70-plus days, do you think that Rance Priebus has conducted himself well? I mean, there's been some recent changes in the deputy chief of staff. I know you've got some comments to make about that.
Yeah, well, and as you know, Bruce, I pay attention to the chiefs and deputy chiefs of staff for my research interests. But I think that this administration has gone through a lot of turmoil in that inner circle in the first 70 days. And the fact that one of the deputy chiefs of staff, one of the three people that have to sort of make the machinery of the White House work, just left, Katie Walsh, was reassigned. And that's quote unquote means
she said she could do a better job on the outside. But what do you read into
that? Well, what you read into that is that they can't get their machinery together at this point, and there's a lot of dissension over what's going on. I don't necessarily blame Reince Priebus for that, but I do think that they're sort of reverted back to sort of a spokes of the wheel model, which, you know, FDR and some of the other previous presidents have used, where you might be chief, but I trust this person or I trust that person more, which creates sort of this political dynamic within the White House, which doesn't always lead to good decision making.
Don't we know, Michael, doesn't Donald Trump, based on what has been said and written before he even became president, that like a lot of executives, he likes to have his deputies sort of warring with each other, battling with each other.
I'm not sure he wants to have them having turf battles. One thing that's maybe peculiar about him compared to many presidents is, and it was a good article about the summer, about the number of people who have access to him kind of he trusts them not to waste his time, but they can walk in. Much different from a very hierarchical arrangement, like a classic example, like Eisenhower. Mm-hmm. If you read Stephen Ambrose's biography of Eisenhower, it's a plug for the late Stephen Ambrose. It's a great book. It took him a long time to do it, but he had a very systematic process. You didn't just go and walk into President Eisenhower's office, okay? But Trump does trust a certain number of people to do that. So I think it's a much more freewheeling.
Former security guy.
And we just heard a minute ago, with national security questions, that may be a problem. So he has to sort out how he's going to have the administration work.
But the job of the chief and the deputy chiefs of staff in a typical setting, again, Eisenhower is one of the people that set this system up and it's been developed, but is to make sure that the president is hearing all the different perspectives on an issue. And when the chiefs or deputy chiefs of staff don't have the ability to do that equally, and people can just walk in, they sort of get the last word. And a chief or deputy chiefs of staff's responsibility is not necessarily to always have the right opinion, but to make sure that the president is hearing all the opinions. An advisor, on the other hand, which some of the people we've counted are have the advisor capacity, their job is to have an opinion.
Provide opinions.
Yeah, so
right.
where I don't think that's being balanced right
now. I used to be a chief of staff. That's a tough job. It's a tough job. Your job is to filter all.
We're chief of staff for those listening around the country.
The City Council of Chicago.
Okay.
There was a president pro temp of the City Council, and he was my boss. So our job was to make the mechanics of government happen in Chicago. So that's a lot of things moving at the same time. The media, a lot of strong-minded people, a lot of smart people, but territorial, and everybody's got their interests. So that chief is key because that chief is going to tell. He or she is the last person in the room. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be almost like a mini elected official. Now, you fall on the sword first, though. Now, and as to Eisenhower, General Eisenhower, right, mm-hmm. when he was June 5th, 1944, on the beaches, getting ready to deploy the men, mm-hmm. He walked to the 101st Airborne. He talked to him. He talked to everybody else. He wrote the note. He said, you know what? This failure is on me. What I fail to see, and I don't mean to be partisan, is I don't see that the buck stops here mentality right now. And I think that's part of why we see the president sort of shifting gears a little bit. He's a little bit more fluid in his strategy. I think that if he had that infrastructure, that things would sort of percolate and filter up, and he'd have a higher quality decision-making matrix at the very end of it. The game theory matters. Mm-hmm.
What's fascinating about this conversation, and this was like enlightening, is that with Trump, nothing is as it was before. I mean, I don't think we've ever had a president like this. I don't think we've ever had an election like this. I don't think we've ever had the country in this. I mean, and yes, there's been wars and there's been things happening and there's 9/11 and so on and so forth. But the thing is that everything is in a different position because we have a president. And I'll give you an example. Roberto is talking as if Trump is a rational guy who's working through some mistakes. All of my liberal friends, and I have quite a few of them, and I spend a good bit of time talking to them, they think Trump is a completely worthless human being who's insane, mm-hmm. and they hate him. And the professors hate him and all. So, and here's the thing. I don't know. I don't think anybody in this room knows. Is this guy just winging it? Is there a process taking place? Is something good happening? I'm hoping it's the optimistic side.
Every presidency takes on the character of the president, but it's like an ecological niche, okay? It's the forces acting on the president and his group make certain things always seem to happen. You have to have some process to filter the information. You need to have some process where he gets multiple opinions and views and suggestions. You also have someone who's going to janitor that and not overwhelm the president. I mean, a lot of these features happen. Richard Nixon, it's interesting, tried to set up a system like Eisenhower had, but then he didn't end up doing it because he didn't like it. He ended up relying on a small number of advisors he personally trusted, which didn't always work.
But in this particular case, there are reports that obviously Steve Bannon was one person before he became his current position. That was somebody that Donald Trump would read and listen to. There have been reports that Alex Jones, who is a talk show host who precedes us on many of our stations in Chicago and also in Austin, Texas, who is a very controversial talk show host. He has a different perspective on the world. It appears that, and again, that Donald Trump and Alex Jones talk occasionally, according to published reports, but he has a completely different view of the world. And it's beyond, you know, anything that would be discussed in polite Washington circles. Mm-hmm. But Donald Trump talks with him. He listens to him. I assume he may be affected by him in some way. And some of the things, the questions that he has about the veracity and the almost the knee jerk reaction that people are supposed to have, that anything that comes from the intelligence agency is to be believed 100%. Donald Trump doesn't believe that. Alex Jones doesn't believe that. I don't think that Steve Bannon believes that. I think there are members of Congress who may believe that, but frankly, they don't have the political guts to stand up and say it for fear of retaliation by the intelligence community.
Any president has to do a lot of different things. Trump's core supporters are people who, in many cases, are not people who were otherwise actively involved in politics, might not have voted, people who really like someone like Alex Jones.
Yes.
I mean, if, for example, if I listen to Alex Jones as I just little bits, it's not so much because I'm going to have Alex Jones tell me what to think. It's because I want to know what he and his fans are interested in talking about. And if I'm Reagan or Franklin Roosevelt or any of these guys, you need multiple sources of information coming to you about how am I my core supporters feeling? Are they happy? And Jones is just one facet of, I think, intelligence gathering by Trump.
But it's also one voice from again beyond the Beltway, beyond the mainstream that inside Washington D.C. media types just cannot understand. That someone like that has an audience and that a person in that audience happens to be the president of the United States, who they didn't want to be president of the United States.
I'm all for a marketplace of ideas, but not all ideas are equally viable.
That's true.
And I'd rather bet on the entire military and intelligence apparatus, the 17 agencies that unanimously make decisions and come to one conclusion, even though not at the same time, than one individual who happens to have a lot of money and made a alternate news media, because I think that, and this is maybe
we got to stop. We'll be back shortly.
What I was going to say is there's a problem.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while 1 in 5 children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks for joining us this evening on opening day of the baseball season. A reminder, if you live in the Chicagoland area and want to come down and remember Jack Brickhouse, the entire month of April, we're going to be remembering Jack Brickhouse at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Give you a little sticker. And again, go Cubs, go Sox. And again, remembering the voice of the White Sox and the Cubs and the Bears and the Bulls. A triple or quadruple threat that we will never, ever see in broadcasting again. Bruno, you have been critical of the president long before it was fashionable. I'm not going to ask you how you voted, but you've identified yourself as a libertarian for the most part on this program. Is the president making a mistake by going after the Freedom Caucus because he views them as the reason why the repeal of Obamacare did not succeed?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. As I've said many times, I was betting against Trump from the very beginning. I said, this guy's never going to – he's going to get – oh, I can't believe he actually won the nomination. He's going to be crushed by Hillary.
Dave Mundy said the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and I had a lot of company. But after Trump winning and seeing some of the stuff that was happening, I decided that I was going to stop betting against him. I have been quite critical of the Freedom Caucus myself. It is one thing to continuously be in opposition of a guy you don't like and his party running the country, you know, and so on and so forth with Obama. I've talked to some very smart people who are, talking about the healthcare issue, and for the most part, it probably would have been better had that bill passed than not, although the bill was not very good. But I'm not a healthcare expert at this moment. So let's put it this way. If Donald Trump makes a decision to go after somebody, you're probably better off waiting a few weeks or months to find out how everything falls out. Everyone said he was insane for doing the Obama spying on me tweet. And all of a sudden, a whole different can of worms is opening up on what's going on in the intelligence community. So I don't know, but I'd like to see something happen, and I'd like to see the Freedom Caucus.
It's too early
back
to
off.
Say. Okay, if he's going to really confront,
to say what?
Whether it was a mistake to take these guys on, but I'm going to
let me ask you a politics 101 question. If you say no to the king, and the king doesn't cut your you know what off for doing it,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to keep going after the king.
Here's what I think is going to happen. I'm not going to bet that the a bill won't pass. What I'm hearing is that there's still the discussion going on, that there's some features. Look, the Freedom Caucus apparently came in and kept moving the goalposts. Trump wanted to make a deal, and they really wanted to dig in. And there's a whole question of being a wonk about this versus you've got to get through the Senate. You can't get everything you want in a reconciliation bill. Don't want to get too far into the weeds on this. But they wanted more than they could reasonably get at this stage. And I'm thinking, I'm a Reagan Republican, and what did Reagan tell us? If you can get half a loaf now, take it and come back for the rest. This bill had repealing the individual mandate, repealing the employer mandate. There was a big tax cut in it. There was a lot to like about this bill.
But the other thing about it is the president's credibility, the president's and the speaker's credibility,
mm-hmm.
were on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan said that the votes were going to be there. They were still counting them. Again, there was the whining and dining and the bowling and everything else that Trump was personally involved with. He can't say he phoned it in. He was trying to – it was a full court press, wanted something to happen, and it didn't happen.
Right.
So the people that did not vote for him – and again, some were Freedom Caucus, some were Tuesday Group. It wasn't all the Freedom Caucus. But he has singled out some people by name within the Freedom Caucus that he may want to primary them.
Well,
it doesn't matter at all.
It's too early to say.
Yeah, the people that he mentioned dominated their race. They're bulletproof.
Yeah.
And respectfully, he did phone it in. He put 17 legislative days into it. The Obama administration put 400 something days into their race, and allowed about 100 amendments.
But then what? But then. Is that Trump's fault,
nobody there is scared of Trump? He has no political capital within the Freedom Caucus because he can't outright them. In fact, they are mad because it wasn't, from my perspective, worse. The other thing is, who wears the jacket for this now? So politically, it's a bad idea. Am I going to blame Obama? He's not there anymore. It's on him.
Well, first blamed the Democrats, which was kind of silly.
But don't think for a minute the speaker doesn't know how to count. That vote was taken, and he has whips, and he knows which way he's going to go. You never ever – rule number one, you never call for the vote unless you know the votes are there. I think that the speaker has aspirations, 2020 is around the corner, and this is a very nice opening salvo for his campaign.
Mm-hmm. So you think the speaker wanted it to go down?
I think he allowed it because he knew that this will haunt the president forever. So I think what the president
does it haunt him forever? It would seem to me that I would blame Ryan. I mean, there's been as much criticism of Ryan than there was
on this a little bit. Is if not now, when? And I think that I made this comment on the show a year ago saying. I think Trump's key issue is going to be he can win in the polls, but can he create the relationships in Congress to get things passed? And this administration to date has not been able to do that. Maybe we'll get a Supreme Court justice. They need a win. Mm-hmm. But if this is supposed to be the honeymoon of any presidential administration,
right. He was never going to have
not.
That.
So when's it going to happen?
Well, and to that point, I think that you're bringing up – I think Roberto brings up an interesting point because – and this is what has me just watching the news more and more, and I comment on it quite a bit, but stepping back a little bit from the kind of prognosticating pronouncements that folks like us often try to make – we're in uncharted waters. I mean, where have you ever seen in this kind of a scenario, first 100 days, a Speaker of a House possibly undermining the president for his own, not only to for, maybe for his own personal gain to run for office 4 years later, but also because you've got an entire portion of the Republican Party that actually still doesn't want Trump to succeed at all.
That's right.
And
most. And Nunes answers to Ryan.
That's right. So we'll just remember what I said on this show 8 months ago. Donald Trump is going to have more problems with Republicans than he is with Democrats. He's got big problems with Democrats. Nobody wants to talk with him, so maybe he'll have more problems with Democrats. But he's got problems with Republicans as well. Thank you all for a great scintillating conversation. This program is a Gen B production, produced in association with WIND, WCGO in Chicago. And also our thanks to Fritz Goldman and Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and Samuel Greenberg for their assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy.